I'll call the meeting to order. Good morning. Thank you all for coming. We're a little bit short of a quorum yet, but we'll get started on our business as well as we can. We do have a couple of new members with us today, so welcome. And with that, I think we'll maybe go around the table and give just a brief introduction, name, rank, serial number, and maybe your connection with the U or what brings you to want to serve on a committee like this. I'll start, and then we'll go back to Jim. I'm Pat Duncanson. I'm a farmer from South Central Minnesota in the 1st District, and I'm a University of Minnesota graduate and wanted to have some way to give back to the university.
Jim Erickson, this is my, I guess, second cycle, right, of selection. I'm a University Law School graduate and a recovering lawyer lobbyist.
Morning, Lois.
Lois.
Harriet, you want to go next?
Sure.
We'll give Lois a minute to grab her.
Sure.
I didn't know. I thought maybe I'm walking up to the end. I didn't know, but I was not walking up to the end.
I'm Harriet Porter, and this is the beginning of my second appointment. I am also a graduate of the University of Minnesota, the Carlson School of Management, and also the School of Education. I also wanted to give back to the university, and this is a great way to be able to do that. I also am a former vice chair of the committee and current vice chair.
My name is Dave Fisher. I'm from Minneapolis. I'm a graduate of the university as well. I've had the opportunity to work with the university over the years and love the institution and want to see it succeed, and so this is one of the ways of accomplishing that. I've been on so long that I've forgotten how long I've been on, but it's been a number of years.
Yep. And past chair as well.
A past chair.
Sally, you can introduce yourself to staff.
I'm Sally Olson, and I help staff this commission. Committee, council. Sorry.
Whatever we are. I'm Sonia Cairns. According to Sally, I'm beginning my third term.
This is your fifth year. You're still your first term. So your fifth year.
Third cycle.
Okay. I am an undergraduate. I have an undergraduate degree from the university and a graduate degree from the university. Happy to be here. I'm a public affairs consultant.
My name is Paul Taylor. Dan and Kathy, welcome aboard. I'm a 1961 graduate of the University of Minnesota, and I'm early in stages of my fourth career. I've been a very active university volunteer for quite some period of time.
So I'm Kathy Mattson. I graduated from the university. I have my undergraduate degree from there. And I had been thinking that I wanted to do something for the U, and this opportunity came up, and I thought it would be a great chance to give back. And I'm a lawyer, but I'm currently on sabbatical, and I've been traveling and just enjoying life for a year, and then I'll be back working soon.
Hi, I'm Dan Walter. I may be unique in that I don't have a degree from the University of Minnesota. I recently worked there for probably about 6.5 years as director of the University News Service, where I served as a spokesperson from 2005 to 2011. Currently, I work in government relations and public affairs for Pfizer, the pharmaceutical company.
I'm Diane Henry Weinstein. I'm an additional staff person for the council.
And Lois?
Lois Josephson, Fergus Falls. Bring a greater Minnesota view to conversations, and experience with the university goes back to youth when I was introduced to government through my father, who was a state legislator. And my first university memory is of the government relations person who was very kind to a child, and so it planted a good seed. The answer is I have continued that interest. I'm a law school grad from the University of Minnesota, Gustavus undergrad, currently work in business development with a strong emphasis in entrepreneurship, and in that capacity have touched base, reached into, partnered with many areas of the university.
Thank you. If more members join us, we'll probably dispense with any more introductions. But, next item is the minutes from the December 11th meeting. We don't have a quorum to approve those minutes, but if anyone has any suggestions for change, we'll have to approve those at the next meeting unless more members join us. If I don't hear of any additions or corrections, if you do have something, forward them to staff, and we'll approve these at the next meeting. A quick review of the RCAC process. There's a yellow handout in our packets that Sally has provided us with, and this is a little bit for all members, but maybe especially for our new members, just to know what you've signed on for here in our task. We are charged with recruiting and recommending regents for consideration to the legislature. So as we go through the process, we are just beginning our cycle where we will actively recruit. And quite typically, for the four positions that we have every time, we are usually able to recruit somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 to 50 applicants. Some years, it seems like we're never going to make that goal, and all of a sudden, at the last minute, we get quite a few applicants that come in. Other times, they maybe come in a little bit easier. With that pool of applicants, and we'll go through the deadlines and so forth a little later on. At our December meeting, we will pare down that pool to the number of applicants that we actually want to interview, and we will notify those applicants and set up an interview schedule so that in January we will conduct the interviews. And from that interview process, we are charged with recommending a minimum of two and a maximum of four to the Joint Committee of the Legislature. So, and those are recommendations. The legislature can use those recommendations, or they can choose other regents. So it's a non-binding recommendation. But our goal is to really generate a pool of applicants and qualified applicants so that the regents remain strong and to the service of the state. I would encourage you to take the yellow sheet home and reread it. I'm hopefully hit the highlights without being too redundant. So. Any questions as we move forward? As we prepared for this meeting, Sally began to inform us about not necessarily changes in the open meeting law, but maybe changes in how we were following the open meeting law. So with that, I'll turn it over to Sally.
In your folders, there is a memo on the from Health Research, and it's on the Open Meeting Law and Data Practices Act, and it's just kind of how those impact the RCAC and your procedures. Just a reminder that the RCAC is subject to the Open Meeting Law and should act in accordance with it. And this also means that any established committees of the RCAC must also be within the guidance of the Open Meeting Law. So that just means that meetings must be held openly. So committee meetings must be held in a place where public can attend. We just have to post notice of the meetings on the RCAC website and just allow the public to be present. The biggest issue, I think, with this is with email and reply all, and I just want to point to that in the memo on the second page, that it's probably a good practice not to conduct business of the committees or the full council over email. I don't know if members have any questions in the open meeting. The next big thing that we learned was related to the Data Practices Act, and you may recall that with applicants to the board, their data was considered private unless that they were selected to be a finalist or in for an interview, and then certain data was available to the public. Well, the part of the Data Practices Act that pertained to was more for employees of government entity, and since 2008 there's been some changes, so we're actually more, candidates are actually more appropriately classified with the part of the statute 13601, and what that is that data that became public when they were finalists is actually now public just as they're a candidate. So we've been working on revising the application so we make applicants aware that certain information, their name, their city of residence, background experience, any governing board experience is available to the public.
You're defining candidate not as when they submit the application, they have activated candidacy.
Right. Yep.
So that in essence is the entire application.
Right, except for the reference check information and the essay questions. And it's essentially the same that became public at one point. It's just now public, available to the public at the onset.
May I ask one further question in that regard? Do we have any ability to have a date upon which that's released such that people could apply and then they're all released simultaneously? At some point, is that, or do they have to be available as soon as they hit your desk?
I was kind of under the assumption that if I'm asked for the data, it has to be available.
Okay.
I wasn't thinking that we'd post all the applications on a website, but if asked for the information.
Okay.
Another tricky thing with the Data Practices Act that we discovered is as it relates to the reference checks. And those of you who remember last cycle may remember that during the interviews we had questions about this too and whether the meeting could close to the public or not to discuss references. And we've gotten further information on that, and meetings cannot be closed to the public to discuss private data. So it's kind of a tricky situation of how to discuss the private data. House Council has given a suggestion to an approach, which is on page 3 of how to discuss private data in an open meeting, which is essentially to have the references in written form, have a code to discuss. This might be something that you guys want to discuss further, or the recruitment committee could discuss if you have questions on how to deal with this private information, discussing it in an open meeting. And we can invite them to address any questions as well.
This isn't something we necessarily need to decide today, but probably more of a primer because it will be a change for how we've done things compared to how it was done in the past. And we do have staff here to help us with that discussion if we would like. So I guess with that, if we could have Mark maybe be available for a question or two and maybe introduce himself. And Matt, yes.
Mr. Chair, while we're at that, while they're coming, would the other members of the audience introduce themselves so we know who's willing to come listen to this arcane discussion on a nice Friday morning?
I think that's great. If you would like to, you're welcome to stand up and introduce yourselves. And if you don't want to, that's fine, too.
Hi, I'm Kent State Graham staff at the Board of Regents.
My name is Chris Hostad, and I'm a student at the University of Minnesota, and I'm interested in being a prospective candidate.
Mary Kay Delbo, I'm the Director of Advocacy for the Alumni Association.
I'm Greg Hubinger. I also work for the coordinating position.
Good. Thank you. Good suggestion. I guess I'll start us off with a suggestion for maybe a scenario in how we could do reference reports, so to speak. And if you would please respond if that sort of scenario might be workable. And this is a scenario that has been written and printed, so I'm not going to take credit for it. But if we were to have written reference reports on a specific candidate that we would discuss at an open meeting, and we would refer to the candidate not by name or to the candidate by name, we would have to, but the person making the reference check by name. If we would not refer to the reference by name, but yet just refer to the written document. And the written document itself, as I understand it, would not be public. Is that correct? Is that one way where we could conduct our business and protect the integrity of the reference process?
Mr. Chair, my name is Matt Guerin from the House Research Department. That's correct. So the issue with data is that when you're discussing private data as part of the business of the council, it needs to be discussed in an open format. And so the sort of verbal communications between members becomes part of the meeting record and would be public. But the written documents that are classified as private data would continue to be classified as private. So anything that you have written down or distributed to council members that pertains to a reference check would not be accessible to the public, but your oral discussions in the meeting would be.
Yep.
So one approach could be to sort of code all the written documents with a letter or a number, and then as you're discussing each document as part of an open meeting, you could refer to the code as a way to indicate to other members what you're talking about.
What about the notes that we would make about the candidate or the reference? If we're making notes on them, are those considered private as well, or are those open?
Mr. Chair and members, that data is also mostly private. There's a list at the end of the memo that describes which items of data about an applicant for appointment are public. So to the extent that you're writing down that information, it probably would be public, but any other sort of personal notes or thoughts or impressions that you're getting as part of the deliberative process would be private data that would not be accessible to the public.
Well, this is actually probably going to affect our January meeting for this specific portion of it when we discuss the reference checks. In the meantime, the more immediate concerns we have is to make sure we're following these procedures correctly is relating to committee reports or committee action. A meeting like this is fairly easy to comply, but the committee action is a little bit of a challenge as well, especially challenging when there's only three members on a committee. So one of the things we probably need to do is to make sure that all committees have more than three members so that one-on-one the committee can function and still be in compliance. At least that's how Sally has pointed out the obvious thing to me.
It removes the opportunity for conference calls, so it becomes problematic in that regard.
You can still call into the meeting, just someone needs to be present at the regular meeting site. So for you, who's in outstate Minnesota, we could still call in and
Okay.
For instance, in order to comply with this, the exec committee had a meeting last week that Harriet was able to come to the state office building and be on site, and that allowed Dave and I to call in. And so we were in compliance.
If I may, Mr. Chair, and I'm wondering, this is a change in the law regarding appointments only. Is that a change over the last couple of years that this occurred? Or is this just bringing to light what has always been on the books?
Mr. Chair and members, there is a new provision of the Data Practices Act that was enacted, I'm forgetting if it was 2008 or 2009, that specifically classified data on applicants for appointment to a public body. And so this is reflecting that new statute that is relatively recent, but would cover this situation here.
Thank you.
Chair, having not read this, reference checks have kind of traditionally, in my experience, been telephone calls. I have never had anything in writing from anybody. So if to follow this approach for how one discusses personal reference data or information, I then reduce it to writing. Does that take it out of being the references information by virtue of having passed through me to get to paper?
Mr. Chair and members, to the extent that you write down your personal impressions of the conversation you have by phone with a reference, that would still be private data that would be on the applicant for the position. And that's actually one of our suggestions in the memo, so as a way to allow yourself to all sort of communicate with one another about what you heard in a reference check is to, if you make a phone call, is to write down on a form or some type of document what your impressions were, and then that data would continue to be private and not accessible to members of the public.
Thank you.
We will continue to review and remind ourselves of how to best follow these new, not necessarily new procedures, but making sure we are following the open meeting and data practices procedures as we move forward. And we're all going to have to remind ourselves of especially some of us who got an old habit to break of how to best comply. So, are there any more questions? Thank you for trying to help us clear this up. With that, moving on to the next item, proposed change to the procedural rule, and again, we don't have a quorum, so I don't think we're going to be able to take action on this, but one of the standing committees that our group has listed in our bylaws, if that's the right rule, the right wording, is the executive committee, and it has made it very difficult for us to comply. Thanks to Harriet, she was able to come and be at this location, but with only three of us on the exec committee, we can't even hardly talk amongst ourselves. So we were proposing to eliminate the exec committee as a standing committee, a subcommittee, I think is the right term, of the RCAC. But we'll have to take that up at the December meeting. Any comments or anything? Moving on to the schedule and timelines on what we're proposing to do. In your packet is the 2012-2013 RCAC schedule. There may be a few changes from the last version that was passed around, but as we and if anyone has comments as we go through this, and we will have further discussion on maybe some of these deadlines as we talk about committee action as well. But our big recruiting season is September through November, with the September 5th being the kind of the official kickoff, although things are happening before September 5th. Friday, the 9th of November, which is after the general election, the exec committee will and the recruitment committee will decide if additional press releases need to be made. The deadline for applications is Monday, the 26th. In past years, there was kind of a soft deadline day earlier in the year. In reviewing the schedule, the exec committee decided that the giving a couple of weeks after the general election would probably be good in this circumstance. And this puts us back to about the last day that we can have the applications come in and still get them distributed to council members in time for council members to have them read and reviewed before our meeting on Friday, December 7th. At the Friday, December 7th meeting is where we will pare down the number of applications that we have and decide by committee action and by committee vote who we will interview. The week of January 7th to the 11th is when we will actually conduct the interviews. So the interim period between Friday the 7th and January 7th to the 11th is the time when we will do our reference checks and probably prepare them in written form for use during our committee action. Immediately after the meeting on the 7th, within the first coming days, the candidates will be notified whether they had been selected for an interview or not. And there's also a press release announcing those candidates for interview that is released on December 11th. On Friday, the January 11th is the final voting. If we actually finish our work on the 10th, I don't think there's anything prohibiting us from releasing it on the 10th as well and doing our voting on the 10th. But part of it is just how many candidates we end up interviewing. And then on Tuesday, the 15th, is our statutory deadline to submit the recommendation to the Joint Legislative Committee. And that's actually the official end to our business. Although we do remain involved, especially with candidate orientation, that we have a special committee involved with that Jim has agreed to be in charge of this year, where the candidates get a little bit of help from our committee as far as what they need to do, what they can do in going forward to the legislature. That is our schedule as proposed, and usually we are able to pretty much stick to the schedule. Some of the things we have to stick to. Any other comments on the schedule? Dave.
Mr. Chairman, you say you'll determine if an additional press release is needed, but I would certainly, I'm sure you will, and I think it would be, we should plan on it, because it will always need more press release and time. So
yep.
Maybe Dan can help you with that. He knows how to do that.
Mr. Chair, in that same vein, we do have that Wednesday, September 5th would be the first press release. And in reflecting further on this, I'm wondering, I think we pushed it out to past Labor Day, thinking that Minnesota is kind of slow until Labor Day occurs. But from my perspective, I don't see any harm in issuing a press release as soon as we can, just to start getting the word out. Do it again on September 5th. I don't think there's anything redundant about doing that.
Yeah. And we can probably do that, but one thing that we don't have ready as of yet is we still don't have the application quite ready. But that doesn't mean we can't have a press release and have a name to send an application to. So that's something that we can work through. I think in the past, the recruitment committee has more or less taken charge of that process themselves. So I would encourage the recruitment committee, if you're ready to go to work before then. Harriet? Oh, I'm sorry.
When we do a press release, is that also found online on the website? Okay. Because I think people who are thinking or are already thinking about running will check that regularly. Okay.
I hope that they do. Yeah. Yeah, I hope they do.
There are some in the wings who are thinking about it.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, one item of clarification. If I understand correctly, at least in the past, the distribution of the applications to council members is done on PDF and electronically with a password. Is that the way it's going to be done again? So you get a packet in your email that with a password account to it. Okay.
And we also had them available in paper form in the past, which it may be, or it may be easier not to do that. Certainly faster. not to. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, thinking along the line of David's suggestion for an earlier announcement, certainly would be logical to simply state what positions are expiring and leave it at that in the early one with reference to the fact that applications will be available September 5th. And so you track the population.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. And we're getting, the application is very close to being ready. I mean, it's we've had to make some changes in it, and the document review committee has looked at it. So
the press will have new information if there's something different on the 5th as versus in August, and that way there's cause for them to cover it just
cover
the time.
It, sure. Any other comments?
Just to address some of the changes on the application, really the big change is the prevalence of the privacy information being really more visible and more emphasized within the document. The other changes are minor.
I think, and Sally showed me this morning a draft that actually is a lot more functional in electronic age. That will make it much easier for applicants to work through the process. So that will help as well. Any other questions or comments on scheduling? Next item is to identify vacancies and expiring terms with the Board of Regents. With that, I would ask the recruitment chair, Dave Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is an item in your packet indicating the four positions that are opening and the current incumbents. I think all the incumbents are eligible to run again, with the exception of Maureen Ramirez, who is the student representative. She was a student when she was first elected, has since graduated from the University of Minnesota. I think that's where she was. Although she could run as an at-large in one of the other seats. So one of the seats open for this cycle and at the at-large position is a student of the University of Minnesota. That position is open. I have talked with the candidates or with the individuals who are current incumbents and can report that two are interested in re-election. That would be Linda Cohen, who is an at-large a member of the Board of Regents, and Dean Johnson, who's also an at-large regent. Maureen Ramirez and Venora Hung are both not going to reapply. So those positions will be open positions, and as I say, one is a student position. So I did talk to each of these individuals. That means that we have one at-large student position and then the 5th Congressional District seat is an open seat that Ms. Hung had held or does hold currently. I just wanted to let people know, just speaking for the recruitment committee, and we haven't met yet. In fact, as far as I know, I'm really the only identified member.
Have you met?
No, we can't. Well, we haven't met because we can't. We used to meet in a living room, but now we can't do that anymore. So. I do want to note that one of the things I would hope that we consider as we recruit for this round as well is that we do have some very seasoned individuals that are coming up in the next round that are retiring, or at least in the next two rounds. Clyde Allen, John Frobenius, and Patty Simmons, I think, are all would be ending their term in the next few years. So one of the things to consider is how we address that. And another thing we need to take a look at is some of the demographics on the Board of Regents as well. I mean, just doing a tally, now I can't find my tally, but as you can see that there are two women that are now retiring, and we've had currently on the Board of Regents 7 men, 5 women. And so one of the things we would want to be careful of is make sure we're getting appropriate qualified women involved, women with and individuals with a people of color or ethnicity that will bring a certain perspective or particular perspective to the Board of Regents and enrich it. If you look at some of the criteria for career backgrounds, and I was just going over this from rule of thumb, we probably could use people with finance background, law background, we're losing one of two lawyers on the Board of Regents, a business background, perhaps entrepreneurial business bent, Ms. Josephson. And we have traditionally had a strong representation on the board from the health community as well. And as you look at some of the people that might be going off the board in a few years, particularly Regent Frubinius and Regent Simmons, it might be appropriate to look at the health community for candidates as well. And then, as always, as we have in our criteria, people interested and involved and knowledgeable of governance and how boards work, as well as leadership, general leadership capability, the ability to lead organizations, complex organizations in particular, are important. The other thing we need to consider, and this is just my own top of the head viewpoint, is that we'll have one way or another a new legislature after November 6th. But nobody will know what the legislature will look like, but this is the body, the one that is going to be elected, that will be electing these individual regents. And so as we continue to recruit, we have to pay attention to that dynamic as well in some fashion.
Mr. Chair, your point is well taken, I think, David, with respect to looking not only at this one but the future. But refresh my memory, is there a two-term limit on regents or three-term limit?
There is no limit on the number of terms. They're six-year terms. There's no limit on the number of terms a regent can serve, but they have generally observed the rule of thumb that two terms, 12-year limit is observed.
So to your point, looking again, not at this one, but in the future, three of the regents coming up next cycle would be at the end of their second term, Simmons, Frubinius, and Allen.
Yes.
I also note, since interesting, the cycle is a little, this is an unusual cycle. We have three at-large positions, albeit one of them is designated, only one congressional district, whereas next time, or in 2009, the legislature had all four district people, and last year it was three districts and one at-large, and this is the reverse of that. Not that it makes a lot of difference, but it does show that we have the whole state basically to recruit in.
That's right.
For this year, with and that of course applies to the student too. And in that regard, how long has the student designation been in effect? Does anybody historically know?
Just one term.
This is the first time that... I think it's longer than that.
It's longer than that.
So a student can have two terms?
No, I was asking you, how long has there been let's call it, I guess it's a designated slot. Oh. You have to be a student.
Oh,
forever?
Quite a while. I mean, Wally Hilke was a student representative, and he graduated more than 20 years
ago. So that's a long time. Have any of those student representatives been other than a student at the University of Maine campus? Does anybody recall?
I don't know.
Just out of curiosity. And anyone would be eligible, any of the university campuses.
I'm quite certain we've had candidates. Okay. But I don't know that we've had regents.
But they must be a student at one of the five university coordinate campuses.
Yes. Only candidate that came to us as a student representative that actually went on to the Board of Regents in another capacity was Benora Hung, She came as a student representative, but she actually was elected by the legislature to the 5th Congressional District, and was at the law school at the time.
Right.
So that's the only one that I can recall that we elected, was elected outside of that student.
And to your question about campuses, Marine had worked in admissions, I believe, on the Twin Cities campus, but in the back of my mind, I think she was at Duluth at the time that we interviewed her, mm-hmm.
yeah.
which was the same year, obviously, as Verona was interviewed.
Thank you. Answered my questions.
Included in your packet is a map of District 5,
mm-hmm.
multicolored. And actually, I'm quite impressed with actually you can see the streets, literally, as well as the major routes. Point out my home, if you like. So the and this is relatively fresh as of February 21st. So with the redistricting process and boundaries changing. Recruitment is, while we have a standing committee that is involved with it, especially for the new members, recruitment is something that we all have to be a part of in order to attract the pool. We can rely on press releases, we can rely on many things, but the most effective method is still word of mouth and personal contact. And it is very rewarding to have that personal contact and then have someone actually go through the process and be involved in that. But we can't just rely on press releases and others to get the job done. We all need to step up to the plate.
If I could describe a bit, Mr. Chair, some of the recruitment practices we've done in the past and some that might be proposed going forward. Our Legislative Coordinating Commission has a very good list of publications around the state, and we notify all of those individuals. We plan to do a mailing. I would propose that we plan to do a mailing to all legislators, notifying them of the open seats, and that they are welcome to make recommendations or at least let us know people that we could contact. I would like to see us do something at the state fair. I'm not sure yet, but it's only a couple weeks away, so we better start thinking about it. And that may be no more than having something to hand out. And maybe even have applications at the state fair, at the booth, the legislative booth that I think is in the education building.
Mm-hmm.
The press releases to publications, of course. The Alumni Association has always been a great help to us, and we will... course, ask for their assistance as well to help identify individuals. It's been suggested, at least among the executive committee, that we think about the U of M Extension Service and whether there's a way of getting word out through that organization and then through various minority associations that represent businesses and or legal or professional organizations throughout the state. So those are a few things we're doing, but when it comes right down to it, it really is thinking of people and probably picking up the phone and suggesting that they do this and asking that they consider making an application. So anybody that comes to mind would be helpful, but for those of us who live in different districts, not just the Twin Cities, we want to make sure that we're covering those areas as well throughout the state of Minnesota.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Yeah, I have a since we don't have quorum, this would be a first read, but this would be, I've given some thought to this. I haven't told you about it, Mr. Chair, so I apologize, but I was thinking about it on the way over here. We had in the last turnaround, we had a number of former legislators that made application for Board of Regents, and they're perfectly well qualified, and we recommended to the state legislature that they consider former legislators. In the debate that followed the process, the issue is raised by a number of people, and I just raise it today for consideration by the council, that it is difficult for the state legislature to look wholly objectively at someone who has just recently left their ranks. There's a certain camaraderie comes with being in the legislative session together, and that perhaps it is unfair to the legislature and the legislators for us to give undue consideration to candidates that may have a legislative background. Now, they may be well qualified, but this council has taken the position in the past that even those that are most are qualified may not pass through in our recommendations because there are better qualified people. Now, I don't want to say legislators aren't qualified. Clearly, they're not. They're very well qualified. But the question I'm raising here is whether when you put a recent legislator, a recently retired legislator, before their former body, whether it doesn't raise a type of conflict of interest that we should be careful to at least acknowledge in open forum such as this. And I don't know if it's within the purview of this council, but I'd like to suggest that we consider putting a rein on it in this fashion, that legislators certainly are welcome to apply, former legislators are welcome to apply, and we encourage that. But that we also encourage them to have been out of the legislative process for a period of time, say 5 years, so that what we have is some kind of buffer there to make sure that the potential for conflict is moderated somewhat. That's all I had.
Well, that's, thank you. It's a good thought. Pausing is good. I just proposed something that would needs a little bit of thought to put to it as well. Certainly, we can't impose anything on the legislature.
Mr. Chair, that was going to be my question. So we would not have the authority to, well, we'd have the authority to, on our own, not recommend someone on that criteria, for that simple criteria. We could do that. They could ignore that. Yes. But we could say, as a policy, for a variety of reasons, we aren't, thank you very much for applying, but we will not be put, people have been elected that weren't nominated by this body, so that happened. So, I mean, that's one option we have. I'm not suggesting we should pick one of them, but I just wanted to clarify what our power was and wasn't, and we could come to an agreement about that. I think David raises, of course, a very sensitive and tender, and I think appropriately discussable, publicly discussable point. We saw that writ large last session, and there were a number of us, I included, who were concerned about that. I think the articulation would be, at least that I would say, that certainly a legislator certainly has some perspective that is a valuable resource within the Board of Regents. Two might be better, three might be too many, and five might be over the top. And I think it's a matter of balance and numbers. I think no one has disagreed, and I'm sure there's been times when there has not been a former legislator on the Board of Regents, but a lot of times there always has been. And I'm sure that the board has been benefited by that person's contacts and experience and advice. I think it is a question not of quality, but of quantity, and that's what I think a number of us, as I recall the discussion, were concerned about last year. But we said, just to refresh my own memory, we said both of those two additional ones that we recommended, meaning that there could be three if the legislature selected that. We did say, well, it's up to them, but those two were qualified, and we didn't feel that we could say they couldn't go forward, that we stamped them qualified as we did our whole list. And that's the way we dealt with it, and I think we had that discussion. We said, well, if the legislature chooses that they want three former legislators on, they could do so, and they did. Now they have two. So it's a little different issue.
Okay.
that's I think it's that point is appropriate. I think it's kind of as people think about applying. I mean, I think I would suggest, Mr. Chairman of the Recruiting Committee, if you get a call or somebody suggests that a former legislator is interested or wants to apply, you might have that candid discussion with them about those issues, and they can choose what they do. I think that's appropriate, and I guess I'd leave it at that. Would be my view.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that David has brought up that issue, and I think this is an important discussion. I know we're only thinking about the possibility of saying there may be a five-year period. That may be excessive. When you think that, or at least I believe, we constantly have to think about getting younger qualified people. If you insist that a person who was a policymaker take off 5 years before applying to be a regent, that might be too much. But I'd like us to keep thinking about that possibility.
I do want to note that I don't think, even in the last cycle, that we had any legislative applicants that had been out of the legislature less than 5 years.
What? I don't understand
now, the candidates that applied that we referred on have been out of the legislature more than 5 years.
Oh, no.
Neither of the two of them.
Not in the last cycle.
At least so. Or getting close to that.
I would say two.
Not Laura Rod.
Laura had finished in 2008?
2010.
10? Yeah. Okay. Then I'm wrong. And I'm thinking of in previous years as well, there was not a very big gap from a legislator's end of service until when they applied.
Mm-hmm.
It was relatively short.
But Mr. Chair, I think there may be two ways to deal with that. One is, and I don't know that we can have a policy about that, but I would encourage the chairman and the recruiting committee to not recruit former legislators. But if those apply, we'll deal with it as they apply. But I think that the sense of our committee, and at least my sense, is that we shouldn't go out and recruit legislators because there are plenty of competent people, and there are now two legislators on the Board of Regents and will be for some time. And, of course, that issue will come up in our – one of them is coming up, so it'll be in the mix.
As we think about criteria that we – and David mentioned many other criteria that we need to think about as far as recruitment and selection as we're meeting in December, that may be one of the criteria that may or may not be beneficial to a candidate to think about their past experience, including experience in government. And again, we make recommendations, and it's up to the legislature to choose who they want. So, but certainly our recommendations are thoughtful and carry significant impact. Good discussion, though, and I'm welcome more of it.
Mr. Chair, yeah. Since we did have a good discussion, I'm sorry to. There's another twist on the recruitment process that is somewhat touchy. Do we affirmatively recruit for people to run against incumbents? I mean, I think the answer is yes, but it's an issue.
Yeah.
And I leave it at that.
If I may respond, Mr. Chair, I think in the past we've made it clear that incumbents are interested in seeking re-election. And I would recommend that for this round as well so that they have a realistic viewpoint.
Isn't it also appropriate
for any one of us personally to recruit more aggressively for an open seat than one in which there are incumbents. I mean, I certainly went through the process, I think, in the past too, of recruiting people and then coming right down to it, they're not going to get in. You know, it isn't going to work. And who do you want to drag through the process and act like we're taking it seriously? And we literally are taking it seriously, but with the understanding that they're going to have a much harder road.
Harriet?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to just address that from the standpoint of I totally understand that and see where you're coming from and where we're coming from on that. I think we've experienced that in almost every cycle. However, we also have had incumbents that have been unseated, mm-hmm. And by candidates deemed to be highly qualified. So I think part of our role really is, as the RCAC, is the commitment to find the highest, most qualified candidates mm-hmm. for the seats and let the legislature make their decision based on our input and their criteria.
Well, and perhaps a companion to that is that we take seriously the notion that there are four seats and that incumbents aren't necessarily going to be asked to serve again or that we wouldn't necessarily recommend them. And I think that is something I've always felt. I've never felt that an incumbent should be looked at less carefully. And it's worth discussing that again when we come to the point that we are really genuinely, as you say, looking at the qualifications and their history as a regent.
So I think this committee's history since I've been on it has had incumbents who were not recommended, mm-hmm. Incumbents who had very lively and frank discussion and narrowly were recommended, and also incumbents who were very good regents that we recommended that weren't selected by the legislature. So I think we can check all of the above. Probably. So I'll get back to our task, and what we can control is to recruit good people and recommend good people. And that's it is sometimes very difficult to do that knowing that there is a strong incumbent. But we don't know what's going to happen further down the line and further down the process. So we have to stick to our charter, so to speak. Lois.
Mr. Chair, looking at our at-large circumstance, we have a fair flexibility in moving people around. And last time we had some discussions about recommending people in a congressional district as well as in at-large seats and those sorts of things. I'm comfortable with where last time around ended up, but do we have any desires to discuss that ahead of time in somewhat the same vein as we just had a legislative discussion? I'm not saying we have to, because I'm personally comfortable. I just remember that in the broil of it, we were struggling a little bit last time.
We certainly could, and if we were going to, I don't know if we're prepared to do that this morning, but we probably have time to do that. In thinking about what happened last time, we recommend people that we felt would be good regents. Mm-hmm. As it turned out, changes had to happen. And we especially saw how we lost influence as that went further downstream into the process.
Correct, Mr. Chair. I was thinking a little bit more along a slightly different tack, and that's that Verona Hung, for example, interviewed as a student, and we moved her into at-large, or Congressional 5th District, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then Dr. Kennedy interviewed as an 8th, and we also recommended in at-large. we have the parameters to do that, and we have done it, but it, you know, it took a little bit of time in the interview process as to folks thinking, well, should we or shouldn't we? Just wondering if we wanted to set any parameters for ourselves ahead of time. That's all.
I personally would like to see us preserve the ability to do that.
For the new members, if I can paraphrase the discussion, what we're talking about, and make it entirely obvious. In fact, Sally is going to nickname me Mr. Redundant, or maybe something besides Mr. Redundant. But there's almost every cycle there's a discussion of when an applicant fills out the form and they might check a specific congressional district, or they might check at large, where we end up having a discussion where someone lives in a district and doesn't get necessarily recommended for that district seat, but gets recommended for an at-large, or we would like to recommend them for an at-large seat. So there's always a little bit of discussion about whether we should or shouldn't, that's partly what it was really active discussion at the last cycle.
And Ms. Chair, in my experience, every time I've been through this process, we have always considered those we are not recommending for a district and move them into a at-large seat if they have checked both the district and the at-large seat box.
Not necessarily move them into a recommendation, but into the consideration pool.
Consideration. Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
I agree.
So one of the things that we could do in December or January is at the beginning of that meeting or of that process is to take consensus of the committee at that time,
okay.
One way or the other. I tend to prefer flexibility.
Okay.
It's served us well in the past.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Harriet?
Well, I would also like to say that I think the legislature may take that action too. So I think if we are proactive on the front end, it lends credibility to our process as well.
Yeah, in fact, the legislature probably will take that flexibility. So, yeah. Any other comments on the, I think we were on agenda item number 7, vacancies and Board of Regents discussion. Mm-hmm. Moving on to the committee review process, the chair has recruited a committee chairman for the standing committees. The goal was to make a pitch to council members to join the committee so that we could get enough people, at least 4 on each committee as we move forward and leave here today. That's going to be a little difficult because as I look, I think we would all need to be on 3 or 4 committees. So. Perhaps if we could just very briefly, for the benefit of our new members, if I could call on our committee chairs to at least introduce yourselves and maybe introduce a little bit about what you view as the major work of the committees. There is a handout in the packet. Lois, I realize I'm putting you on the spot. I can certainly skip over if you're having trouble finding the. You're good? Okay. And as of this point, I don't know that we have certainly members who have served on committees in the past are free to not serve on those committees in future cycles as well. There is no binding repeat work to the committees. However, we did recruit chairs from past committee membership. So, Lois?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Going to numbers, have you done any rough estimating as to how many committees, even with everyone present, we would need? I'm assuming that we're obviously going to all want to be serving on 2, and is that number actually 3?
As I look at the committees that maybe don't need quite as many, or the document review committee is probably something that the exec committee and maybe one more person would probably do. So I'm going to throw that out of consideration, and probably nominations as well. So I look at the other committees, I'm going to count interview process, candidate, recruitment, references and selection, so that would be 5. And we have 24 seats available.
Do we? I mean, the email that Sally sent out, I count 18 names. So
yeah,
where are the other 6?
We're still waiting on appointments from the Senate. That's why we're down.
Okay. So
that's your other names.
Those are, we're waiting for 6?
We're waiting for 5. We have one member that was appointed that we are trying to track down. That's why they're not on the email.
Okay, so it's 18 plus 5 plus 1. Okay, thank you.
So if we have 5 committees that we're trying to recruit 4 members for, we can do that with
only one committee only service.
One. Yep, commitment of service.
Okay.
Certainly if someone is interested in serving on more, they're welcome to, I think, as long as the committee chair.
Okay. Thank you. Interview process and questions is the committee to which the chair asked if I would consider leading. Had the opportunity to work on that committee 2 rounds ago, I believe, and we made several modifications to a sample about 2 pages of questions that people utilized. In the past, again, fully open for review, we found ourselves sometimes each taking responsibility for a given question, and it was not an assigned, it just happened to sort of fit our personalities, and you could see how it would happen with a given candidate. They weren't always asked. In the sheet that's in our folder, there's reference to how do we ferret to the best degree possible when we're interviewing. And that's an area that I would like to have the committee work with this year. In the past, my sense is that our questions might have been a little bit topical in, you know, kind of making sure that we touched all the points of the day, the points du jour, so to speak. Sometimes those replicated material that was in the application, and I'd like to have that not occur to the best degree possible so we can take the window of time to get beyond and get into the depth. So from the point of view of considering this committee for your service, that would be an area that I'd like to work with.
I'm going to bring up a point that that staff brought to my attention in that the process that the another committee of the legislature goes through, for the Minsky Board,
mm-hmm.
Just completed their cycle and their process. And staff had some experience of how the interview process went with that and may have some input to share
with
the committee as well.
Excellent. Thank you.
Jim, candidate orientation.
I have the easiest job of all, probably, once we, as you see on the schedule, in January sometime after we announce and the deadline is passed and we have our candidate list, I organize a meeting where they are invited in, and we invite the higher ed chairs to come, and that happened last year. I think that's been the tradition, I think. I think I followed the grand tradition. And I think most of the candidates attended, and they heard from the chairs about what, I guess, both background and what they're looking for. And I think that was helpful. I was also able to, besides what the chair is saying, give them a little idea of what was coming. So that was helpful. We'll do that again. But it occurs to me, and so that's simple, as I said. And I don't know that I need a committee, because that's all we do. You know, I call the meeting, and so I don't think we need 3 or 6 or 5 people to do that. So I'll be happy to just be responsible for that without chairman, without a committee. But it was helpful to them to get some perspective from those chairs. It begs a question here that goes back to our earlier discussion, what's always kind of behind our mind. I look at our December 7th meeting, where we meet to review the applications that we've gotten and select candidates to interview. I'm just going to pose the question as to whether, as part of that agenda, we would want to invite either the chairs of the then newly appointed, if you will, chairs of the committee, to that meeting, or perhaps the leadership, to suggest to us if they have some suggestions. Now, in one sense, maybe we're wholly apart. We don't want to know what they say, but in another sense, it might not be a bad idea. So I just throw that out as something, whether at that meeting on the 7th, we would want to invite, to start with, the chairs of the committees, just to tell us what they think, or do we want to be apart from that process? What I ask the question. Paul? Oh, excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
The chair recognizes you.
Chair and Jim, do you have some inside knowledge that the legislators who will be elected on November 6th will have appointments for these higher education committees within a month after that?
Oh, that I would think that the legislature will be organized by December 7th, and we would know who their committee chairs were by that happens fairly quickly. And I would be surprised if the caucuses hadn't been organized, their leaders picked, their leadership picked, and their committee chairs pretty much in place. So that I think we would certainly know who the leaders are, and we would know who, and I would be surprised if they didn't have their higher ed chairs in place. Now, so the question is, do we want to hear from them or do we not?
I think tradition has been that we have heard from them.
At that meeting?
I
don't think so.
I don't know that it was necessarily at that meeting, but fairly early in the process we had heard from them.
Well, we don't have too many. That's about the only meeting we have that they could hear, because when we get into the heavy interviewing, I suppose you could do that then too. Excuse me. The first they could appear at the meeting. Did that happen last year? I don't recall that.
I think generally in the past, we'll kind of have them in after the fact, so they're at the December meeting of the odd year. So if you make your recommendations in January, and then we've had them, whoever the leadership is at that time, the chairs, in at that December meeting where you kind of recap what happened. So they kind of give you, I think.
But we didn't do that last December, did we?
No, we didn't.
Probably just as well.
We tried, but they couldn't make it.
Okay. Well, I just asked the question, Mr. Chairman, to think whether the sense of the group is that would be helpful or not.
I think it's valid. The other invited guest that we usually have either at this meeting or the December meeting would be a representative of the Board of Regents.
Right.
And someone from the board to tell us as much as possible how the board is functioning and anything we can do from an information standpoint that help in our decision. Whether we want to remain separate from the legislature or not, we're not separate. We serve because of them. We're connected to them. Everything that we do goes to them. So I don't have a problem inviting them to come in and have a discussion before we start our process.
Harriet? Just a point of observation about the questions that were asked by those individuals of the candidates that were interviewed, and this ties into our whole process really, and why I think it is important to get them in here if at all possible, as early as possible. The questions that they asked at the public forum in which they interviewed the finalists were slightly different from the questions that we asked. And so I think having insight into what they are looking for on the front end really could help us with our process.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, if I may. You referenced December 7. As I look back over my experience on this committee, it has been wonderfully positive, with one exception. I've never been fully comfortable with the December elimination and selection and elimination meeting. Okay. It has felt like it's gone too fast, and I because it's really critical. You don't recruit people who aren't capable in the first place, and so that decision process has to be fairly careful. We don't have references on them yet. We're just dealing with those application materials, and I found myself in every instance wishing we weren't pushing against the clock and thinking that it would be nice to have a wider window of time. We don't have to use it all, but to not be smack dab up against the clock, which we have been up against every year of my experience.
So, Lois, and we're digressing a little bit here, but the practical aspect of that, and I have felt that way as well,
okay.
Through different parts of our process, that, wow, we accomplished an awful lot. Did we do it thoroughly?
Yeah.
Was in the back of my mind.
Right, right.
So how would we just allow more time for the meeting on December 7th?
That's what my thinking was, if we could have access to a three-hour block rather than a two-hour block.
Yeah.
Or, Mr. Chair,
yeah.
Two December meetings, a second meeting. I know December is not a good time to meet, and we're a big group, and we have people come a long way, but certainly more time at that meeting, and I don't think were we limited. Do we only take 2 hours and have to rush out? I mean, we took as much time as we needed, didn't we? So, but the another solution to that is it kind of takes time to kind of gel, mm-hmm. and I, for one, it's easy for me to say. I live 3 miles away. Wouldn't object to a week later, a second December meeting to give some time for that to bubble along. But that's one suggestion. I have the same feelings that you do.
Okay. Harriet?
Well, I guess what I'd like to pose there would be the budget issue. I'm not sure that we have budget to have a second December meeting.
That's certainly a concern.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
We're at a 10 o'clock. Do we do one and then have access to go until 4? Whereas 10 we tend to shoot for 12, and that's when we're attempting to adjourn.
Diane, you were about to say.
The council's been allotted for fiscal year 13, which is what we're in now, 14,000. I'd have to double check, but I think I think Harriet's right that it's really close as far as the funds, how things go. Having a second meeting, I'd have to just do some projections of some cost to see if it might be possible or not. Because we don't know what the expenses will actually be. We have a good idea for the interview process, but again, I could just do some projections and let you know pretty quickly.
And the interview process tends to be quite expensive because of
yep.
lodging for us
yep.
out-of-towners
yep.
and so forth.
Exactly.
I do have another suggestion that I'll throw out, and it's based on my agrarian roots, and that everything we do revolves around food. sometimes I think much better with a fork in my hand and something else in the other hand. but what if we were to still start at 10 o'clock or at an appropriate time and instead of having a working lunch, taking a break and walking out of the room and then coming back and I would propose we would discuss things in the morning and maybe have a selection process after a break of some kind. And it doesn't have to be a food break. But, and just take a purposeful break and slow the process down a little bit because I, too, have felt rushed at times. Harriet, why don't you?
Mr. Chair. I would fully support that. I think that gives us the opportunity over lunch to review the applications and the comments of other council members to really make a more informed, thoughtful attempt to make sure we have the right candidates.
We may need to be careful as far as discussing meeting law.
Right.
We may need to be careful about that. The other thing is, in looking at how small our group is this morning, in order for us to function maybe a little better, a little bit of downtime or social time, just visit a few minutes, might be beneficial at the December meeting. Lois?
Yes, I was going to go to just the point that Sally stepped forward and that you just raised, and that's that we would need clear guidance as to what our options are over the noon hour, and I'm assuming, again, having not fine-toothed the legislation, that it would be our personal review of
yes.
of our notes and
yes.
the like, and no discussion.
Thank you.
Yeah. So that's something we will definitely consider as we work towards the December meeting. Any other comments on that thought?
I would be totally guided by the executive committee deciding how to deal with that issue, the structure, the timing, and appropriate, and I also would be happy and pleased to defer to the executive committee on this issue about whether at that meeting or another one you want to hear from any legislative input. So I'll throw the ball to our leaders here, and however you address that.
Thank you. Any other comment? Otherwise, we'll move on to we've already heard from Dave with recruitment. Anything you'd like to add?
Yes, Mr. Chair. First, a preliminary.
We're all on recruitment, whether we're on the committee or not.
I was just going to say, everybody's out there trying to find the best candidates. I might just add, I am going to volunteer for the candidate orientation committee, only because if, Jim, you have a meeting with yourself, you may be in violation of the open meeting law.
You're welcome to join me. That's absolutely true. It's
and then we just won't ever talk.
We won't ever meet. We'll just show up at that meeting. I accept your appointment. Thank you.
And with that in mind, I'm also going to ask, Jim, that you and Sonia both serve on the recruitment committee, if you don't mind, because you're going to be recruiting anyway, I believe.
I'd like to decline that, for a specific reason, it goes to this issue that Sonia talked about. And it comes a little bit from my background as a lobbyist. I have a very strong rule. I don't try and beat incumbents because I work with them all the time. Now, that's a segue into our responsibility here. This legislature can certainly reject an incumbent, but my personal view is I would not recruit against in spots where there is a stated interested incumbent. And I also believe that in that particular on the regions, experience matters. So I have I do value incumbency. So I hate to be just half, you know. But I will certainly help you in those others, but I don't want to be formally on the recruitment committee for that personal reason. No reason that other people shouldn't be, but I want to be candid and upfront about my view about that.
I appreciate that, and honestly, I wasn't expecting you to respond today. I was just trying to put you on the spot. But
David, that's hard to do.
But that's a good observation, Jim. I appreciate it. We all are recruiting for people, and we should all keep our eyes out and our ears open, and we should ask others as well to come up with recommendations, and that would be family and friends, but more importantly, people that we respect as leaders in our respective communities. We'll try to get the word out as broadly and as fairly as we possibly can. I think we've done that effectively in the past. Generally, just for those that haven't been through this process before, generally we get towards that deadline and we're dismayed that we don't have enough applicants. We just don't have enough people showing interest. But somehow at that last sweep into that last week, suddenly people start getting it going. And I think what happens is that if we approach people at this early stage, we don't really expect anything more than to put the word out. We don't really expect people to react until they have a time to ferment this for a while. But by the time we get into November, we should have that fermentation out there. People should have thought about it, considered it, have debated with their families whether it's appropriate, because the work of the regents is first and foremost a thankless job. It is a very important job. It's critical, I think, to the university and to the state of Minnesota. And it's 40 hours a week, they say. I think that's a little understated because that's basically meeting time and doesn't necessarily take into account all the studying that goes on between. So it's a big undertaking. But it takes time for people to think through that. So the earlier we get the word out, that's great, but we can expect slow application process in through November. So I'm encouraging people, everyone think about it. We'll try to do a formalized process and get things going. But I certainly welcome anybody who wants to be on the committee to be there. But the first point I'm going to start doing is probably asking people who have served the last go around to serve again so we make sure that we have a good seasoned group as well. But I would like to invite our new members to consider it. It's a very important part of the process.
Mr. Chair, yes, I will do that, David. But I think you meant 40 hours a month. And I want to, you probably picked up on that, but, you know, that would take out all working professionals. So
40 hours
a month plus.
That's the second correction I have today. So.
Good. Unless there's other comments, moving on. Document review is more or less has been a function of the executive committee and probably will be this year, although we have one other individual who has already volunteered, so that gives us our four. Bert, yes, from Park Rapids. So references, Paul Taylor.
For you two new members, I mentioned earlier that I'm in the early stages of my fourth career, and one of those legs is management consulting, and my original client and still today is Doug Sams of D. Bryan's Deli and Catering. So maybe we could have our reference committee meetings there as long as it didn't violate the open meeting law, and I probably can offer more of an incentive than any of the other committee chairs. But having said that, Pat and or Sally, it would be helpful for me to know who, in addition to myself, served on, I know that Pat was the chair 2 years ago, but in addition to Pat and myself, I think Lois might have been on it, or I would just like to know who we had formally designated for that committee 2 years ago. And then one other question. I can't recall specifically when I started reaching out to those three or four applicants for their references. And are you suggesting we did not do it until after we met on Friday the 7th of December or whatever the exact date was 2 years ago?
Yes.
So we're making decisions about the next round without having done reference checks.
We typically at the December meeting make our decisions from the applications.
Okay. All right.
And then after we have selected the interview candidates is when we do the reference checks so that we have a reference report.
Fair enough.
And Sonia?
Okay. Could I make a point? I know we were talking about potentially adding another meeting beyond December 7th, and then seems like we've moved back to a longer meeting on that day. One of my discomforts every year is that when we get to those January meetings that, you know, we're taking phone calls and several of us haven't totally finished our work. And I think the reality with the holidays coming in there, we need that December 7th point from which we start interviewing and getting them in and remind ourselves and one another you really have to get them done because it's so hard to be fully prepared, and it's not fair to the candidates. I remember one time right before we were interviewing, literally going out in the hall and talking to a reference, and that isn't fair.
Well taken. Thank you.
Before I finish my pitch,
there's a bonus here.
There is a bonus. You'll recall 2 years ago, one of our applicants that we chose to interview at the time was the president of the University of Maine. And one of his references was the sitting senator from Maine, Susan Collins. So it may be that you'll have an opportunity as a part of the reference committee to reach out to a real dignitary that would never take your call under other circumstances. So just think about that, Kathy and Dan, along with a free meal at D. Bryan's.
It's quite a package.
Well, and again, as a point of clarification, we all get to do references.
I'll have to talk to Doug Sams about that.
Okay. Yeah. Harriet, selection criteria?
Sure.
I had the pleasure of serving with Billy Young for one or two cycles on this committee, and there is a rough set of, actually it's a little more than rough, set of criteria that we use as a base for the selection of applicants to move forward to the candidacy role, and also for recruiting candidates that will meet those, or recruiting applicants that will meet those qualifications. I'd like to take this a little deeper, and part of this committee's work is determining really what is that, what is the criteria that is needed for this cycle, what is the makeup of the current board. Where are there gaps in knowledge or skills that are needed? And then also on the legislative side. So unfortunately, I'm a management consultant, but Dee Bryans is not a client. Billy and I met.
I'll make sure that continues to be the case.
I think we need to talk. Billy and I typically would meet for coffee. We'll have to talk about open meeting laws and those requirements. I'm sure we can find a corner somewhere if we need to meet in to go over this. But it is generally just a little research on the front end, one meeting together to iron out the criteria, and then we're done.
I will graciously agree to be a member of your selection criteria committee.
Thank you, Paul.
And we're going to be passing around a sign-up sheet for anyone who's ready to put their names on a certain spot here. So, in fact, with that, why don't we pass that around? And we're nearly done with our business, so if you don't see it before you leave, please stick around for a few minutes afterwards. Moving on to the next item, requesting volunteers to attend upcoming Regents meeting. This is certainly not a requirement of being on the council, but as a way to prepare for our process, it's valuable that we're all familiar with what a regent actually does, and sometimes attending a meeting can help that out. So Sally has prepared in the agenda a list of the upcoming posted meeting dates. There is also the potential to attend online, so to speak, so those of us from out of state don't have to travel. I've asked Sally to, when she receives the agenda from university staff, to forward that on to us, and to also forward on the web attending information, so that if you can even attend for a few hours and just observe the process of the board. I know it's something that I need to do again before we go through this process, so hopefully I can make that work and encourage anyone who can attend in person to do so. Lois?
Are we raising our hand at this point vis-a-vis these meetings? Or?
We certainly, if someone is willing to commit to go to a meeting, they certainly can, and if you'd like to commit to go to a meeting, I think it is good to have an RCAC presence at the meetings if we can.
I will raise my hand for September and for the 12th of October.
I'll do the 11th of October. If it's really interesting, I may come back for the 12th.
Mr. Chairman, I'm planning to be at the September meetings, but you should know that the first day is committee meetings, which are a little harder to observe. The second day is probably a more relevant day to go to Friday instead of the committee meetings. Not that they're not valuable, but you get to see the dynamics of the big picture on the Friday, not the Saturday. But I intend to be there on the 14th. Sorry. In any case, you can certainly. I'll see you there then.
Okay. Well, that was easy. Thank you for suggesting that, Lois. any other volunteers for any of the dates? And
I'm sure I'll be there.
Okay.
Yeah, Paul goes.
Is there any other business to discuss at this time? Does anyone have anything else to bring forward?
When we get the nominations that are for the open seats, I presume staff will get us a list of kind of everybody according to the, I mean, the full list of members, because it's empty now, but the next time we meet, or you send out a list of everybody in the terms, and maybe even their appointment, their appointing authority, and so on. Just
with the RCs.
Yeah, when you get that. Yep. Thank you.
Yep.
It'd be nice, yeah.
Yep. Mr. Chair, in formation of committees, one of the things that I was thinking of doing was suggesting that we have a meeting date, but I don't have a committee yet. I am presuming, based on the conversation we had with House Counsel earlier, that if I were to contact individuals and ask them to be a member of the committee, I can go ahead and do that. And I would recommend other chairs considering that as well once we see the roster.
Actually, even before we see the roster, we need to be recruiting. I think as a follow-up to the meeting, of the minutes to the meeting, we will request that members continue to volunteer and to get active on the committees. We'll have to monitor through the committee chairs how many members they have to make sure we have enough to function. So. Is there anything else? We do have expense reports.
Are you collecting these on him or just
mine? That's fine. You can do it at the end.
Yeah. Anyone else have any other items to discuss? If not, we shall adjourn.
Great. Thank you.